Welcome. Hello there. Today is Thursday, November the 3rd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, less than a week to the presidential election, and one group could help decide.
We can expect women to outvote men because that has been the trend.
How the U.S. financial markets are reacting to the presidential campaign. America's space agency makes a big announcement.
We will see things that we have never seen before.
Also ahead, the habits of happy people. It's all on today's International Edition. Well, Americans will elect a new president on November 8th as the candidates and their surrogates fan out in battleground states to make their case. Campaigning for Hillary Clinton in North Carolina on Wednesday, President Obama told a crowd of young voters he believes Donald Trump is unqualified to lead the nation.
I've got Republican friends who don't think or act the way Donald Trump does. This is somebody who is uniquely unqualified. I ran against John McCain. I ran against Mitt Romney. I thought I'd be a better president. But I never thought that the Republic was at risk if they were elected.
Well, Donald Trump spent Wednesday campaigning in Florida.
When we win on November 8th, we are going to Washington, D.C., and we are going to drain the swamp.
While issues like the economy and foreign policy are important, polls indicate that many voters are likely to make their decision based on how they feel about the personal attributes of the two major candidates. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has more on how character issues are dominating this year's election campaign.
In the final days of the campaign, White House hopefuls Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump are focused primarily on each other's flaws.
I love this stuff.
The renewed FBI probe into Clinton's use of a private email server while Secretary of State has pushed the issue of her trustworthiness front and center, and Trump wasted little time in seizing on it.
This is the biggest political scandal since Watergate. And it's everybody's deepest hope that justice, at last, will be beautifully delivered.
Clinton may be on the defensive, but she's also lashing out at what she believes are Trump's character flaws in the final days of the campaign.
Donald Trump is out there stoking fear. Disgracing our democracy. And insulting one group of Americans after another.
Hillary is the one who broke the law over and over and over again.
Presidential campaigns often center on issues like the economy, foreign policy, and immigration. But this year is clearly different, says expert Matt Dalek.
This race has primarily become about character and about personality. And I think this issue of character is going to remain front and center. I don't think it's going away. And I think to an unusual degree, issues in policies are not really as central as they typically are.
Polls show many voters question whether Clinton is trustworthy, but an even greater number fear that Trump lacks the temperament to be president. The perceived flaws of the two candidates have dominated the campaign, says West Virginia University analyst Patrick Hickey.
I think that this is a very odd American presidential election in that both candidates are viewed unfavorably by the majority of the American people. You know, usually that might happen to one candidate, but not both.
The questions about character have been center stage throughout the campaign. Trump went after Clinton over the email issue in the second presidential debate.
If I win, I am going to instruct my attorney general to get a special prosecutor to look into your situation.
In the third debate, it was Clinton who went on the offensive over Trump's controversial comments about women. You
know, Donald thinks belittling women makes him bigger. He goes after their dignity, their self-worth, and I don't think there is a woman anywhere who doesn't know what that feels like.
With all the attacks on character, the election outcome likely will depend on which supporters are more motivated to vote, says Patrick Hickey.
And this is definitely a kind of anti-election as opposed to a pro-election, which I think means on election day, turnout is really going to be what matters, which side can turn out voters to actually get to the polls.
One of the longest and most divisive U.S. election campaigns will come to a close next Tuesday. And for many voters, the end can't come soon enough. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
Well, women will be playing a big role in this election, not just because we have a woman presidential nominee, but we also have another candidate that's been accused on several occasions of misogyny. And women will also play a key role in voting. It's been a very unusual election season. Here to talk more about this, Kira Samban-Matsu, senior scholar at the Center for American Women in Politics. Thanks for being with us.
Well, I agree. It's been a very unusual election. There's typical ways we would expect to see gender playing out in any presidential election. So, for example, we know that women are a majority of voters and that there's a gender gap that typically favors Democratic presidential candidates. So women voters are an important group that both parties typically court. This election has been unusual, being the first time a woman has secured a major party nomination for president. She's a Democrat, so she is going to benefit from a natural gender gap with women, but she has also made her status as a female candidate more salient. So part of what we're seeing is a strategic choice in terms of how she's campaigning. And as you mentioned, in Donald Trump, we have someone who is definitely unusual in terms of his relationship to women's issues and women voters. Very different from past Republican presidential candidates who have tried very hard to secure the votes of women. And of course, with the tape and the sexual assault comments, we're seeing an unusual moment and a kind of watershed moment in this country for the issue of sexual assault. So not only Trump's comments and the problems he has had with comments related to women throughout both the primary and general election, but also the way he has decided to respond to various allegations. It's really likely that we will see a large gender gap on election day. Certainly the polls are showing large gender gaps, and so for all these reasons, we're likely to see a gender gap next week.
When you say we're likely to see a gender gap, are you saying that you think more women will be getting out the vote, or more women will be voting for one particular candidate, or both?
Both. We can expect women to outvote men because that has been the trend, but I'm thinking about vote choice. So whereas normally women are going to be more supportive of the Democratic candidate than men, this year men's and women's preferences have departed more than ever before in terms of polls. So in terms of both turnout and vote choice, we can expect a large gender gap. In terms of choice, we're probably headed toward a historic gender gap.
Are you thinking that many, many more women are going to be voting Democratic or for Hillary Clinton?
Yes, that's what polls have been showing. And as I said, she has a natural advantage as a Democrat because women favor Democratic candidates. But this has been enlarged by her candidacy interacted with Trump's candidacy. For sure.
Theoretically speaking, women could decide the presidential election?
Certainly. Especially, we'll have to see what happens next week, but this race is coming down to the battleground states, as it usually does, and how women vote will be very important. How men vote is also very important because the gender gap means that Hillary Clinton doesn't do as well among men as Trump does. But the turnout advantage Hillary Clinton has, because women's voter turnout is higher, that can mean that women may be very important to what happens on Election Day.
How big of a deal will it be if Hillary Clinton becomes the first female president of the United States?
A very big deal. I mean, it's been challenging for women to run for the presidency historically, and even in terms of congressional office holding, we know that women do well when they run, but that women are still only 20% of the Senate, for example. So it's been difficult for women to achieve the most substantial offices nationally. So it's very significant if a woman is to clear that ultimate hurdle, which is the presidency. And it's a very important position for many reasons, including the symbolic value of having a woman as leader of the country, as commander-in-chief, representing the United States on the world stage. There's obviously some potential substantive policymaking ramifications, but there's also tremendous symbolic ramifications of her serving as president. But also, if she were to win the election, it means that she has the American public behind her. If she does win, it will be with the help of not just the American public, but with women voters disproportionately. So I think women voters, if they support Hillary Clinton at the rates that they are telling pollsters they're planning to support her, she will owe her victory to women voters in large part.
All right. Well, we certainly appreciate your perspective. Kira Sambamatsu, senior scholar for the Center for American Women in Politics. Here are some of the stories we are following at voanews.com. A humanitarian aid group says over 1 million people in Mosul, Iraq are facing grave danger. The words "Vote Trump" are painted on a burned African-American church. The U.S. condemns Israel's move to build 181 homes in East Jerusalem. And more than 1 million U.S. Muslims have now registered to vote. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues now with the American stock markets. They've been sliding ahead of next week's presidential election, even as the U.S. Central Bank announced on Wednesday it will continue to leave interest rates unchanged this month. International Edition host Jim Stevenson gets some insights from VOA financial correspondent Jill Malandrino.
Well, the expectation for rates to remain unchanged was certainly there. Now, traders are pushing that out by about 70% to December's meeting. Even though rates were unchanged as widely expected, you want to take a look at what they said in the communique. Essentially, the wording was the case for the rate hike increases, which is essentially the same thing as they said as the last report. There were only 2 dissents in favor of a hike. That's down from 3 from the last meeting. I found that interesting. But what the Fed is essentially saying is they want further evidence and data to support an interest rate hike, which is a way of saying they didn't want to do anything to throw another wrench into the markets prior to the election. But I think we could really expect something on December 14th, when it's the final meeting of 2016, to get that interest rate hike. I don't expect markets to act as volatile as they did last December if you just isolate the interest rate hike in itself, because the Fed has been incredibly clear telegraphing their decision to hike rates in December.
We have 6 days remaining before the elections when we find ourselves with a new president of the United States. Investors certainly watching what is going on.
Regardless of the outcome, several analysts do not expect a major election-related long-term market disruption for several reasons. Most notably, the stock market historically has performed well around elections as policy uncertainty is resolved. Now, you might ask, how can you even know what policy they're talking about? Campaign rhetoric is mainly just that. It's rhetoric. Priorities for the candidates do not necessarily match the amount of time they spend discussing various issues on the campaign trail. We have a system of checks and balances in the U.S. For example, Donald Trump will not immediately slap tariffs on imported goods and start a trade war, whereas Hillary Clinton, she will not break up big banks, even though she could do it unilaterally if she was able to do that. At the end of the day, corporate America is very adaptable. Over the past 80 years, many disruptive policies have come and gone. We've had recessions, periods of high inflation, interest rate spikes, Federal Reserve rate hike cycles, wars, terrorist attacks, etc. Through it all, S&P 500 companies have grown profits by an average of 8% annually, which is quite a good return. So I think we'll get more of a Brexit-style reaction. Well, you will have the immediate near-term volatility, and the markets will continue to go along with business as usual.
All right, that's VOA financial correspondent Jill Malandrino. Turning now to what's been trending on social media, we're joined by the lovely and talented G. Abby Lee. Hi, G.
Hi, Lori. So let's start with a story that should come with the disclaimer, don't try this at home, kids. Two Australian guys snuck into North Korea, also known as the Hermit Kingdom, to play golf. A natural place to go for golfing, Morgan Ruig and Evan Shea sent an email to the North Korean government to request to play at their international golf tournament. Now, when Pyongyang assumed they are professional and national golfers, they just played along complete with fake national team blazers.
Whoa. Are they okay? Are they safe?
Yeah, so I am pleasantly surprised that they are back in Australia safe and sound. In fact, they did multiple interviews with local media. They actually came in second to the last at the international event, so who knows what the level of the players were. The Australian media went crazy over this, and the two guys said they will try to do the same for an upcoming tournament in Somalia.
Wow. Okay, so what else is trending?
This is great news for Disney fans, specifically those who enjoy Beauty and the Beast. The animation's live-action rendition is set to be released on March 17th of next year, and on Wednesday, Entertainment Weekly shared the first full image of Emma Watson and Dan Stevens as the main cast for the movie. Within 5 hours, more than 10,000 people liked it. Watson is also trending because she has been hiding books on the London Underground, which is the metro system there.
And what's that about?
It's part of her effort to promote her reading club, Our Shared Shelf. You know, Watson is not just an actress, but also a feminist icon. She's acting as the global ambassador for UN Women. She hid 100 copies of American author Maya Angelou's Mom and Me and Mom at tube stations around London and even tweeted a selfie from there. Lori?
All right. Thanks so much, G. You can follow her at G. Abby Lee. We also invite you to follow the International Edition stream at VOA_IE. You're listening to International Edition on VOA.
Tuesday, November 8th, the American people choose a new president. VOA's live election night coverage begins at 2200 hours Universal Time. As events unfold, we'll bring you the finale of this historic campaign from Washington and VOA correspondents across the United States and around the world. Tuesday night and Wednesday morning, you'll hear comprehensive coverage until the last speech is done. It's America Votes 2016 on VOA.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
VOA's International Edition continues now. These days, a lot of Americans are quite stressed over a variety of things, including the presidential election. Interestingly, though, there are things that happy people seem to have in common. Joining me now is New York-based psychotherapist Jonathan Alpert. Jonathan, I've traveled overseas, and it seems like folks outside of the United States are less stressed. What are habits of perpetually happy people?
Before we look at the habits of happy people, I think we have to look at the culture. So if you've been traveling in Europe, they have a much different take on work-life balance, and generally they look at vacation time much more generously than we do in the States. You know, they may have 4 or 5 weeks of vacation time, whereas in the States, starting a job, you're lucky if you get 2 weeks. So
right.
There's just a different view of that. So that can set the tone as far as people having a balance between work and life outside of work.
Right. And I've noticed, too, even places like some of the developing countries that I've been to where mm-hmm. people have a lot less money, they seem a lot less stressed and they seem happier.
Well, you know what they say, money doesn't buy happiness. However, having said that, I do think that money can eliminate a lot of stress, but it's certainly not the panacea, and it certainly doesn't necessarily lead to happiness. So I work with a lot of extremely wealthy people, and they're not necessarily happier than the person who just gets by and pays his or her bills. Unfortunately, a lot of people place great value on material things and on money, and they come to realize that that's not what will make them happy, but rather experience is. So, for example, buying a super duper 100-inch TV is nice to look at, but I'm not so sure how happy that will make someone. And the things that we tend to remember, at least when gifts are given, are experiences, not material items. So that's why I usually encourage people to give the gift of an experience. So a trip somewhere or to a museum or an amusement park for a young kid. These are things that people will remember more so than super expensive toy or item. So I think part of what we need to do as a culture is shift our focus less on material and more on experience. And that's one step towards happiness.
And what do you notice about people that are happy? Do they have things in common?
They do. I think for one, they tend to be positive and optimistic. You know, we all probably know people who are Debbie Downers and they see the glass as half empty as opposed to half filled. And people that I know professionally and personally who are optimistic and have a positive vibe, they just tend to be happier. They're not defined by mishaps, or they certainly don't let negative thinking rule their life. They understand that negative events happen in life, and they look at these as challenges, but they move on from them quickly, and they're not defined by these events. Whereas someone who gets bogged down by them or is defined by them will probably be more prone to anxiety or depression.
So what advice would you give people that just aren't happy and don't really have a reason for being unhappy? What advice would you give them to change their perspective?
Sure. I mean, I think there are some pretty simple things that people can do to start to feel a little better, a little happier. They can focus on things that they actually have control over. So a lot of times people will obsess over things that they really have no control over. So the weather, for example. We don't have control over it, but we certainly have control over how we may dress or travel if the weather is bad.
Mm-hmm.
Health issues. We don't often know what our fate is or if we may get sick or come down with a disease, but we can certainly do things to be healthy, to ensure that we have a healthy lifestyle. I know people that will obsess over medical issues and worry that they may get sick. So there really isn't happening. Other things that people can do, they can surround themselves with happy people. So there can be a bit of a contagion effect. So if we're around people who are unhappy or negative, that energy can bring us down. So just the same, if we're around people who are happy and positive, that might wear off on us as well. And then also, I think enjoying the work that you do. So many people go to work, they spend a third of their day there, and they're just miserable. They don't enjoy what they're doing. So people who tend to be happy also tend to have a meaningful job and they look forward to it. Hard to find, but if you can achieve that, I think you're one step closer to happiness.
All right. Thank you so much for that perspective, New York-based psychotherapist Jonathan Alpert. You can follow him on Twitter at Jonathan Alpert. Well, the U.S. Space Agency NASA Wednesday held a press conference with some big news. Joining me now for details on that is NASA Jet Propulsion Lab Ambassador Greg Redfern. Greg, what did we learn?
NASA had a media event at its Goddard Space Flight Center in Greenbelt, Maryland, which showcased the James Webb Space Telescope. James Webb Space Telescope is described by NASA as being the successor to Hubble Space Telescope, and it's poised for launch, if all goes well, in 2 years from now.
What exactly does this mean for space exploration? Why is this a big deal?
I think, Laurie, that when James Webb Space Telescope reaches its 0.1 million miles from Earth and all the checkouts are completed and the telescope begins observations, we will see things that we have never seen before. Things like the very first stars, the very first galaxies to form in the universe. We'll be able to explore planets other than our solar system, search for the origins of life,
see how galaxies evolve and be able to explore the farthest reaches of our own solar system to discover things that we didn't even know were there.
Is it true that the mirrors of this telescope are covered with gold?
That is true, Lori. There are 3 ounces of gold that cover the 18 hexagonally shaped mirror segments, and this is done in order to allow James Webb to have the greatest efficiency in collecting infrared light. This telescope's going to operate in the infrared, not visible light, but infrared light, and it's going to pick up the faintest of light from 400 million years after the Big Bang. And the telescope has to operate in an environment only 50 degrees above absolute zero, or over 400 degrees below zero Fahrenheit, in order to collect this faint light from billions and billions of years ago.
NASA Jet Propulsion Lab Ambassador Greg Redfern. Well, thank you so much for listening to International Edition. You can find us anytime at voanews.com. And thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Zainab Abdel-Rahman. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States Agency for International Development, or USAID, announced a new project that will assist Vietnam's transition to climate-smart and low-emission development through improved forest protection, enhanced biodiversity conservation, and increased resilience of communities. USAID's Senior Deputy Assistant Administrator for Asia, Gloria Steele, announced last month the USAID Green Annamites Project during a meeting with leaders of the People's Committee of Quang Nam Province. This project, which runs from 2016 until 2020, will invest approximately $24 million in Quang Nam and Tua Chien Wei provinces. Forests play a critical role in Vietnam by protecting watersheds, preventing soil erosion, mitigating climate change, and providing for resilient communities. They are also home to rare and endemic species only found in these areas. Unfortunately, Vietnam's forests and the people and species that depend on them are under increased pressure from unsustainable development. The USAID Green Annamites Project, working in tandem with provincial authorities, will engage smallholder farmers and their families to improve livelihoods and increase investment in climate-smart agriculture while conserving the natural biodiversity of Quang Nam and Tua Chien Wei provinces. Climate change is a priority issue that directly threatens achieving Vietnam's sustainable development goals. To accelerate Vietnam's transition to low-emission development, USAID supports Vietnam's response to climate change through adaptation, sustainable landscapes, and clean energy programs. Climate change work is an important part of our strategy in Vietnam, said Ms. Steele. This project is designed to improve people's incomes by promoting investment in climate-smart agriculture, while at the same time conserving Vietnam's natural forests and biodiversity. Quang Nam and Tua Chien Wei provinces are demonstrating how sustainable development can contribute to Vietnam's efforts to achieve low emission and resilient economic growth.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at voanews.com/editorials.
is for, what's